This episode is brought to you in part by Wholehearted Love, a new book by Caleb and Stephanie Rouse. Overcome the barriers that hold you back in your relationships with God and with others, and delight in feeling safe, seen, and loved with Wholehearted Love. For more information, go to Tyndale.com.
Joanna Meyer, welcome to Viral Jesus.
We're kind of saying that a female perspective is optional. It's not worth investing in, and that kind of a default male should work for everyone. And the reality, it doesn't. Regardless of your theological conviction, you need to actively be seeking the input and empowering the ability of women to be developing other women. That's really concerning to me, and it's no surprise because I see it happen a lot in my own networks. Yeah, my heart kind of sank about that. And it really pushes me forward in what I'm doing with Women Working Calling, because I'm like, okay, if the church is not going to take women's discipleship seriously, then for the space that God has entrusted me with, we're going to run hard in that space.
From Christianity Today, this is Viral Jesus, a show about communication and the power of social connections, where we talk to some of the most influential Christian content creators to find out how they've made their faith go viral. Everyone I talk to on this show is someone I follow or was told to follow online. Most of the conversations you'll hear are with people I have never met in person, yet they've impacted how I think. What does it look like for Christians to enter the chat thoughtfully? Let's grow together on Viral Jesus. I'm your host, Heather Thompson Day. Hello, friend. Today we continue part three. It is finally part three of our four-part series, Advice from a Woman, Women's History Month. Hello. Today we sit down with Joanna Meyer. I love Joanna. I got to serve with her a bit when I lived in Denver, and we just always kept in touch. So I am so glad that I get to introduce you today to someone who has blessed me in real life. But before we get to that, are you ready for Social Toolkit? This is where we discover tips and best practices for entering the chat. Today, I wanted to talk to you about social media and how the lines between our private and public life are a bit blurred because of it. Did you know that 87% of recruiters are using LinkedIn to source a job candidate? And interesting enough, 55% say they have used Facebook. So here is your tool for your social toolkit. Be conscious of what you are posting online and how it may impact a potential employer who is looking at your social media page and thinking of you right now for a position that they have open. And you have no idea, of course, that any of this is even happening. 70% of employers say they scan someone's social media before they call them for an interview. That is huge, 70%. 43% say they look at the social media accounts of their current employees. So here is the rule that I always say for myself, and I say it to my students, and I know I've said it on the show before, but I'm going to say it again right here. I will never post anything on social media that I wouldn't also post in my office break room. If I wouldn't feel confident posting that photo or saying that sentence in my office break room for my boss to see, I'm not going to post it online. And I just think that that can be a really helpful measuring tool for what type of content you're posting. Your employer and future employer may be looking at your Instagram right now. So create content wisely. And that is a tool you can add to your social toolkit. Today, we sit down with Joanna Meyer. Joanna Meyer is Director of Public Engagement at the Denver Institute for Faith and Work, where she leads public events, hosts the Faith and Work podcast, and founded Women Work and Calling. Her latest book is called Women Work and Calling, Step Into Your Place in God's World. Here is my conversation with my friend, Joanna Meyer. I like to open these interviews by doing some digging, looking around the internet streets and seeing what I can find about the person I'm talking to you. For you, Joanna, I found this, it was a viral clip of a podcast you did, and I found it on Instagram. And I think I actually commented on the original video. Joanna, I either commented or I sent you a DM and said, will you please come on the podcast and talk about this? So I'm going to put a link just so everybody knows. I don't want you being left out of this beginning conversation. So I'll put a link to that interview and to the Instagram clip that I saw into the show notes. The reel has over 270,000 views. So you clearly said something that people really resonated with. I'm going to paraphrase just a little bit of it. And then I just want to ask you to expand. But here's what I have. So you in the reel, it opens with you saying that you were sitting with a woman at coffee. And she said, I am 42 and coming to terms with the fact that I may never be a biological mother. And then you go on to say that you think that's an increasing reality for a lot of single Christian women, and that they are having to come to terms with this fact in their lives. What do we do when our life doesn't look the way we imagined or we thought or we were sure it was going to look? And that a sense of grief comes with that. Are you able to expand on that?
Yeah, the conversation was part of a podcast in which I was discussing a chapter of a book I had written called The Grief and the Grace of an Unexpected Career that tracked my own vocational journey. You know, I spend my days helping Christians think about the critical role their daily place, workplace, and God's mission. And for me, in my own journey as a single person, I found that as I moved through my 30s and into my 40s, there wasn't much of a roadmap in my faith community. Because marriage and motherhood was held out as the end goal of any woman. And so when that wasn't happening in my own life, and when I began to have some medical problems that made it increasingly likely that I wouldn't be able to have kids, I was just adrift. I didn't have a roadmap for what my life needed to look like. And so this broader conversation about women, calling, vocation, was a lifesaver for me. And so that viral clip was part of that broader conversation. How do we acknowledge the very real pain that Christian women are facing as they experience this transition? And as there are less available men in church circles, it's harder. I mean, the internet exists, but I mean, I've braved those waters. It's not an easy place to be, and it's not a guarantee that you'll be able to find a quality guy to get married. And so women are having to ask these deeper questions of like, who am I if I'm not a mom? And that has galvanized my work in founding this national initiative called Women, Work, and Calling. But it also has been a deeply personal place as I've dealt with the grief of that transition. And so it was fascinating because I'm not really like a viral person. That's why I reached out to you, because I'm like, Heather, you will never believe what we are seeing the response. A friend of mine walked up to me at church, which was the tip off that something might be happening, and said, a video of you is on my Instagram, and it was starting to circle for over 2 months or so. It was crazy where that video was popping up and the response it was getting from people, just because we needed to have an honest conversation about the grief that exists for women who are navigating that. And we need a broader vision for how women are integrating their various roles, especially for women who are singles, who have this amazing capacity to press into their vocational lives.
And I want to hear more on how you counsel people to do that. I can tell you that our audience here at Viral Jesus, I think we have a lot of single Christian women. It's an area that often, I'm just really passionate about bringing people on to speak into that space. Some of the best bosses I've ever had who poured into me professionally, opened doors for me that I didn't deserve. I mean, just were incredible mentors to me were single Christian women. So I like talking about it. I think it's an area in Christianity that there's not a lot of voices willing to speak publicly. So I do want to thank you for, I got an email this week from a woman. She was in her mid-30s, but she was going through in the email the grief that you're talking about, saying, I'm starting to wonder if this isn't going to happen for me. Yeah. And how do I navigate this part or this second half of my life if nothing changes? How do I still see, actually, can you speak to that at all? Like how do,
yeah.
And I think anybody listening, if that's not your story, Okay, insert whatever that thing is that you were sure God was going to do and fulfill. How do we navigate that absence and still believe that God is good?
Yeah, I think, one, I want to express compassion for your listeners that may be journeying through that. I know in my own journey with coming to terms of not having biological kids, it was a good probably 4 or 5 years of that journey for me. So I'm just going to be honest about what happened to me. Yeah. I had a hysterectomy at 45. Mm. I had had uterine fibroids that were just taking over my abdomen. And I had just been bleeding excessively for years. It was kind of a dominant theme in life. And so, you know, we knew that something was not right. And we're going to try and have a bunch of smaller procedures done to stop the bleeding. And so I was watching that happen over a couple of years before the surgery. I remember talking to my friend, like, I'm just going to pray for a miracle because I feel like if I have my uterus removed, this will never happen. And if at least I can live with this bleeding for a couple of years, there might be something that God could do. We might be able to make it, you know, he might provide a spouse and this might happen. And, you know, so there was a lot of internal churn going on in my life. And then there was the grief of navigating after the surgery of what that meant. So it was a surprisingly long window of time in my life. And it was really hard because I didn't feel like there were people in my life that navigated that well. There were a handful of people. And this applies, I think, to a lot of forms of grief. There were a handful of people that could handle some of those more ambiguous forms of grief and were able to just sit with the inability to resolve it. And that's the reality is that there's not a good solution to this. It's not like God's going to sweep in. I found in my life, I was doing a lot of, I was doing spiritual direction. I was doing counseling. I was doing, you know, long seasons of prayer and Bible study. And people would imply if I just did the right things or got the right formula of treatments to journey through my grief, that the pain would go away. And it just didn't. And so I want your listeners to hear that there can be prolonged seasons of fear and anxiety and grief. And yet the Lord is present in that. And I can say, you know, at the end of a 5-year journey for me, that the Lord has been faithful and present, even if he was very, very quiet in those seasons. And so I would want to acknowledge both the emotional and the spiritual side of the journey. And as a source of comfort, I don't think there's a formula for getting your way out of this. And yet God is faithful, nor does he sprinkle spiritual fairy dust over our lives and make the pain go away. Because I think I had some voices at the time, like if I just read the Bible and believed that I would feel better. And that wasn't the case. And so I think there's a unique skill set of people that have the ability to walk through grief with others. And so you need to find those voices and be listening to them. So that's the emotional and spiritual side of it. I also think there's a broader theological framework that plays out of our local churches that sometimes can be missing. And that does relate to this broad idea of calling, that when Christ calls a woman into relationship with him, he's calling a whole life response, meaning that it's not just a call to motherhood. It's not just a call to marriage. It's a call to relationship, to discipleship, service, those cores of the Christian faith. But it's also a call to join with Christ in his renewing work in the world. And so suddenly any aspect of our lives, from our daily work to our neighboring to our civic presence, is a place where God is at work. And one of the challenges in women's ministry at the local church is that we've centered either spiritual disciplines that are important. I want to affirm that. Things like Bible reading and prayer and learning how to experience God. We've centered that, and we've centered our relational callings of marriage and motherhood as the primary skills that we're developing women in. And we're not calling them into this vibrant, full life response to God. And so I needed that when I got through my grief and even before the grief started, you know, when I was in my late 30s and I have leadership gifts, I'm like, what the heck do I do with myself? I needed a broader framework in which my gifts could have a meaningful impact for the Lord in the world. And so that theological vision of a broad calling, of a big, rich gospel in which our whole life responds to him and that the substance of our daily work matters, that subject matter expertise that everyone has in their work matters. I needed that as a roadmap of something that I could invite myself into. So that unique mix of friendships, of theology, of just journeying through grief were all part of that transition. And I hope that that's something that your listeners can find in this process.
Talk to me about what you see calling as. Like, again, these are like Christian words, I think, that those of us who grew up in the church, we always hear them, you know, like, what has God called me to? How do you define that term for yourself? And how do you explain it to other people?
Yeah, that's such an important question. And I don't know, I'd be curious to see what your listeners think to how I look at it. But I think it's a lot simpler and broader than we often make it to be. So I suspect that we have a lot of kind of Christian culture that's built up around the idea of calling that may not actually be biblically based. So I'm drawing from experience of time spent with a couple of professors at Denver Seminary, and they look at scripture and say that calling plays out in a couple of ways. One is like an extraordinary call from the Lord to people that played a distinctive role in the life of the history of Israel or in the early church. So that would be like Moses in the burning bush or the Annunciation to Mary when she was told that she would bear Christ. So it's a very specific voice of God inviting someone to a specific response in a dramatic way. The other way that we see calling is a whole life response to God. And it's also a calling into Christian identity in the life of the church. And that is actually what is normative for most people that follow Christ. So we're called into relationship with God, that discipleship, service, his purposes in the world. But we're also called into the life of the church. And you see that lived out in passages like 2 Peter 1, which talks a lot about there's one, you know, we talk about one faith, one body, one baptism. That oneness of being part of the body of Christ really is part of our call. We talk about that in my new book, Women Working Calling, of the freedom that comes from having a broad understanding of calling. It can feel challenging because don't we all want that clear voice from God of saying, I want you to go do this? But actually, it's a place of great freedom, and it puts us in a place of daily discernment of listening to God's direction in the small ways of everyday life. Instead of waiting for him to shout it from the heavens, I want you to do X, we can trust him in the dailiness and in that broad invitation. I mean, if a life of faithfulness as expressed in the New Testament, if that's our model for the Christian life, we have some pretty great marching orders. You can have a purposeful, impactful life responding to those things.
I'm sure you already know this, but I'll say it for the person who's listening. One of the most fascinating studies I read, I remember this, of the Barna Group, and it was about Gen Z. It was saying that Gen Z doesn't know what to do with their faith as it relates to their work. They see them as separate things. And so Barna was saying in this article I had read, this is probably 2 years ago, that a great opportunity for Christians and for church leaders is to speak to that intersection of faith and work. And that is something that I think you are stepping into. And I'm so grateful for that, especially as a woman. What have you seen when it comes to young people? And have you seen a little bit of that divide? Like, if I'm not going to be a pastor, I don't know what my faith has to do with my job.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's fascinating how differently different generations think about work. And even Christian women, how different our experiences just simply because of the generation and the time period that we were born. And so I think as we look at Gen Z, we see workers who have very different expectations for their job. They want good work-life balance. They want their work to feel meaningful. Sometimes even that their work is making a tangible and visible difference in the world. And so sometimes discipling folks for work means like there are aspects of our work that are really broken. There are aspects that are drudgery. And so it could be helping us have a realistic purpose for our understanding of work. That's part of it. But part of it too is building on that incredible passion that Gen Z is bringing to the world and saying, let's harness that for the type of godly influence that you can have in all the different forms of work that there are. It may be easy to think, oh, I need to go do something that is overtly missional to feel like my work matters to God. And the reality is, Christ is at work renewing every corner of creation. We see that in Colossians 1, this beautiful picture of like all things have been reconciled to God through Christ. And when he says all things, he means all things. And so the dynamics within a workplace at a major corporation in town, or if you're a middle manager and you're leading a team, you're entrusted with the stewardship of that human potential. Yes. Management is holy work because of how you're shaping and developing the lives of the people that you lead. And so we need this broader vision for how God is at work through work to see the missional potential that's there. And suddenly, I think when you allow the gospel to be big like that and you say, how is that God at work in this place? I think your faith gets really exciting because it's not just limited to the spiritual activity you do at church. Suddenly, like what you do as a real estate agent matters.
Yes. I cannot agree with you more. I say this all the time. I really oh my goodness, like all we are called to do, whenever a student says to me, like, what, I just don't know my purpose. I'm like, purpose is not a destination.
Yeah.
The definition of the word purpose is the reason you do what you do. You go to class with purpose.
Yep.
Right? And we go to work with purpose. Your book, am I right in saying that it's an award-winning book?
It just won an University Press Writers' Choice Award.
Congratulations, Joanna. Seriously, congratulations on that. That is amazing. The book, just for, if you guys want to pause the episode and pick it up, it is called Women, Work, and Calling. I want to read a bit about the book and then just ask you why you felt the need to write it. Here's what I have found. Women now have professional opportunities beyond what previous generations ever imagined. But as our roles in public life have grown, the church's vision for women's work and calling has not grown with us, leaving us feeling isolated and under-resourced. The book talks about this critical gap between Christian women and discipleship. Tell us, why did you feel the need to write this book? What do you hope somebody walks away after reading it, understanding differently?
Well, you got a glimpse of my own story. As a single woman, work was playing a critical role in my life. Nobody else was paying my bills. And so I needed to figure out, how does my faith inform this career reality in my own life? But for the last 8 years, I've led an initiative called Women, Work, and Calling through the Denver Institute for Faith and Work. And Heather, that's how you and I met back in 2020 during the pandemic. You did a panel with
and
us.
And I have to say this, friends listening, it is rare for me. Typically, we talk to people that I have not met in person. And that's the point. Like, people can impact people online. Joanna has impacted me online and in person.
Isn't
so it's fun? Super. What an honor to have you on here today.
Yeah. So, you know, we discovered early on in this conversation that women were really hungry to talk about a broader vision for what a life of faith would look like. And so we were doing work locally around this theme of Women, Work, and Calling. And then the pandemic took us online, which you were part of some of those early conversations.
Yes.
And we've seen this conversation grow to be a national and an international initiative. And we're gingerly starting to use the word movement because we're seeing such response from women. And I say that carefully because that's not a small thing to use that word. But we're finding that women come alive when they're introduced to this integrated vision of calling. That we can hold all of our roles and responsibilities together. It's not easy. There's tension there, but that all of them are integrated into this life of faith. And so a woman's leadership and ambition in public life in particular is a place of deep godly influence. And often when we don't have this broader vision for women's roles, we're not discipling them for that work. And so over the last 8 years, we have seen this initiative grow, Women, Work, and Calling through Denver Institute, and women are just hungry. Like, women's eyes start to sparkle, Heather, when you invite them into this rich conversation that speaks to all that they are. It's amazing to see how women respond. It can be life-changing because often it's for the first time. Women, like a woman came up to me after our annual event earlier in November with tears in her eyes, and she said, "For the first time, I feel seen." And I think that's the reality, is that Christian women are working. That's the reality of an expensive place like Denver, where I live. It's good to have a one-career household here. You just can't afford it. But we want to know that the way that we're leading out in public life, or if you're a stay-at-home mom who's rocking your local PTA, that is a place for godly influence and that we speak into it. And so the book has come out of 8 years of working in this space. One thing I am enjoying seeing women respond to it for is that it's short. This is not a super deep theological tone. It's really action oriented. We have 20 short chapters addressing themes from thinking biblically, like what's a biblical and theological foundation for work, but also what are the emotional and spiritual challenges that we may experience as we are leading in public life? What also are the practical challenges that many women face as they're in the workplace? How can our faith help you overcome some of those very normal barriers women of faith and not of faith face at work? And then finally, we talk about the power of relational generosity. What does it look like to have a vision for relational networks and how they affect your own career growth, but also can affect your workplace and industry and community? So it's very practical, and yet there are themes that I don't think a lot of women get exposed to in their faith community. So it's been so fun to see groups of women take the book and have book clubs. It's ideally suited to that kind of conversation. Grab a cup of coffee and your girlfriends and dig in.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you in part by World Relief, an organization that partners with the local church to serve the most vulnerable. Around the world, increased conflict, the lingering effects of COVID-19, and disasters caused by our changing climate have left millions of people in desperate situations. Many are fleeing their homes and are facing starvation, persecution, and more. These overwhelming challenges cause many of us to wonder, can I make a difference? The answer is simple. Yes, you can. When you join The Path, World Relief's monthly giving community, you partner with World Relief in bringing hope and transformation to the millions experiencing vulnerability around the world. And when you partner with your monthly gift by September 30th, your first year of monthly gifts will be matched dollar for dollar up to $25,000. Double the impact of your giving and visit worldrelief.org/viraljesus today.
I want to ask you, what are you hearing and seeing from the women that you're serving about this difficulty that people have had in building community for themselves, either at work or just in their neighborhoods since COVID? I mean, it does seem like there's been a shift. My neighbor asked me over for coffee this week. And part of it was, she was just saying like, she's lonely.
I love
it. You know what I mean? And it's like, what practical advice can you give people in like a workplace where, you know, there's different rules of professionalism? How do we build community and have relational health post-COVID?
Yeah, I think there's a real hunger for that. There's a hunger for mentorship too. I think a lot of younger workers, as we were talking about Gen Z, they want to have input from wise people who can speak to them. And so there's that sense of like, how do I find a mentor? So I think if we take a step back from that conversation about mentoring, we start with saying, how do you become a person who's relationally generous? And by that, you realize like, oh, I want to be the kind of person that shows up in relationships and can build mutually beneficial relationships. To me, that's like the heart of networking. I've had a few friends that have, you know, like jumped into career life and didn't know how to network. And I'm like, really, it's just about building mutually beneficial relationships. It's not just sitting down and feeling like you're trying to take from the other person, but it's saying like, I have things that may benefit you and you have things that, that I need. So let's talk about getting to know each other. Let's talk about what you need. Do I have relational context that would benefit you as you grow in your career? So it starts with that inner work of saying that you see the value in relationships. You do the own work. I think for women in particular, I was talking with a friend about this last night, we can sometimes have relational hurts from our interactions with other women. And so if that is characterizing how you feel, like if you step into a women's ministry group and you think, oh, I'm just uncomfortable. I hate being in groups of other women. You see this on The Bachelor. Do you still watch The Bachelor, Heather?
I just watched The Golden Bachelor.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I just finished that one.
You know, you'll see the contestants step into that space and they'll say, oh, I only have male friends. I don't have female friends. And it comes from a place of hurt.
I'm just going to say, and I know people have been hurt. I get it. But I do want to say, and this is from like a communication statistics standpoint, all of the research, friends, shows that women make better friends. Men say women are their most deep, loving relationships as it comes to friendship. And women say this about themselves, that their most fulfilling relationships come from other women. So I do want to say to you, if you have been hurt, I am so sorry. But also, the best way I think to heal that hurt is to stay in relationships with women, because they do relationships so well statistically.
Totally. So it starts with like, what's your perspective that you want to be generous towards the other person? It's going to take initiative and courage. You're going to want to work through issues. If you have issues that make you nervous about friendships with other women, like get some help to work through that. Yeah. And then I think it's just taking an initiative and showing up and being curious. I'm amazed sometimes at the lack of curiosity in other people. Like, have you ever sat down for a holiday dinner with your family and you're like, we did not talk about anything. Like, are these people just not curious about what's going on in each other's lives? And that's part of it, is if you can learn to ask good questions and have just authentic, gentle curiosity about the person on the other side of the table from you, it'll be amazing how a friendship can grow. And so I would just say, just do it, take the initiative. And here's a tip from someone who is, you know, I'm in midlife. And so people started asking for my time. And I think if you're initiating with someone that is more mature in our leadership position in advance of you, keep your expectations open and low for that first interaction. Just be clear for what you're hoping for. Someone I didn't know asked me the other day, I'm wondering if you'd be my mentor. And I wanted to take a step back. And I'm like, she got a gracious no from me because I had no context. You think about the leadership and relationship I manage in my current role. I already have a full relational load. And so if somebody isn't in my network or contributing to the work that I'm trying to do, I'm not just accepting a stranger in for mentorship. But if she had asked me in a more clearly defined and open-ended way, hey, I see that God's doing something neat through you and I'd like to learn a little bit more about it. Would you have a few minutes to tell me about your work? That woman would have gotten a guaranteed yes.
Joanne, I love the way you said that. I see that God is doing something neat through you, and I'd love to hear more about that. You guys, write that down. That was gold. I love that vocabulary.
Yeah. Or you can even just say, like, I would, like, imagine you're going to interact with a more mature, you know, woman that you want to get to know a little bit better. Just even saying something like, I'm thinking a lot about what it will look like to grow in my leadership. And I'm having conversations with more mature female leaders. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to share some thoughts on things that have been critical in your own leadership growth. Can I buy you a cup of coffee? That's a very time-defined, specific request. And you'll get the wisdom of somebody that has mentor potential or wise input for your life. You're more likely to get a yes when it's a simple, open-ended ask like that. And so that's a great way to begin building this a network of rich relationships.
I have to ask you this question. I saw Beth Ellison Barr shared a study on Threads, and it was quoting a Christianity Today article. So I was like, okay, what is this? And I'll link it also in the show notes so you guys can read it too. But the study essentially found that 83% of women's ministry leaders were unpaid. Yeah. And Jen Wilkins, who wrote the article, says, lack of investments communicates that ministry to women is nice, but not necessary. I wanted to ask you what your thoughts were on that research. I think it came out of Lifeway.
My heart just sank. And as somebody who has been in more conservative church circles, I see this play out a lot. And I think what I would say is, this is important for male church leaders to hear, is that you may think that the programs that you're creating are gender neutral. You'd say, oh, you know, we kind of planned this with you in mind. This should work for everybody. But if the only voices that are involved in the planning or in the envisioning or the curiosity of the early thinking stage, if you aren't actively seeking a female perspective about that, that's not gender neutral. That's default male. And that changes the thing. And what I think is so harmful about this when we talk about not painting women's ministry leaders is that we're kind of saying that a female perspective is optional. It's not worth investing in. And that kind of a default male should work for everyone. And the reality, it doesn't. Regardless of your theological conviction, you need to actively be seeking the input and empowering the ability of women to be developing other women. That's really concerning to me. And it's no surprise because I see it happen a lot in my own networks. My heart kind of sank about that. It really pushes me forward in what I'm doing with Women Work and Calling, because I'm like, okay, if the church is not going to take women's discipleship seriously, then for the space that God has entrusted me with, we're going to run hard in that space.
What is one piece of advice that you would give to somebody listening right now who, let's say they're 25 to 30, and they're in their beginning of their career, they're done with school, and they're trying to figure out, they're in a job, let's say that they're in the job that they're not loving.
Yeah.
What piece of advice would you give to them?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think maybe there's a nuance to the answer of that, is that the first is there are aspects of every job that are not enjoyable. So part of that conversation may just be dealing with expectations and learning about work and what work feels like. And I mean, that's biblical. Like, the brokenness of a sinful world flows right through the workplace. And so our work is as dysfunctional and messed up as anywhere else in life. There is that part of it, of just, I think, maturing into working life. But then another aspect of that is to say, let's lean into some vocational discernment. Maybe where you're working isn't the best fit for you. And so you can lean in and figure out what really are the things that I'm made to do versus the things that I think I think I should be doing. And that can be a lifelong journey. And the reality is, career unfolds over time. I mean, I often describe the way that my calling has played out as a patchwork quilt. I've had all kinds of stops along the way that I had no idea they were building and forming in me what God needed me to be able to do at this season in my life. And so my whole 30s were spent hustling and trying to keep bread on the table. I was an independent consultant. I was part-time. I was contract. I was doing all kinds of different things. And I couldn't have said that I loved my work in that season in my life, but it was part of the broader journey of what God was doing. So I'd say at 25, don't give up. Do the work of learning to become good at your job. Discern if it's really the right fit for you, but realize that it may take some years to see the fullness of what God is preparing you for.
Joanna Meyer is the author of the award-winning book, Women, Work, and Calling. You can get that book wherever books are sold. Joanna, our show is called Viral Jesus. I ask everybody when they come on, what do you think it means to be a Christian when we are online?
Gosh, I think I wrestle with this, but I think the question I ask myself most is what I'm sharing of any benefit to the people that are in my audience? And it might just be I've brought some beauty to their day or I've made them laugh. But I always ask that, like, is there any benefit to the other person for what I'm sharing? And if there is no potential benefit, then why am I wasting their time? Your audience trusts you with their time and their attention and their eyes. And so if you're not offering them something that's of value, like, why are you offering it?
Joanna Meyer is the author of the award-winning book, Women, Work, and Calling. You can get that wherever books are sold. Joanna, thank you so much for joining us.
Such a gift to be with you.
So what can we learn from my conversation with Joanna Meyer? Number one, while women today have professional opportunities beyond what past generations could have imagined, our roles in the public have absolutely grown, but our roles in the church's vision for women's work has not grown with us. Number two, a Christianity Today article found that 83% of women's ministry leaders were unpaid. Jen Wilkins, who wrote the article, says lack of investments communicates that ministry to women is nice, but not necessary. Number three, remember to acknowledge and care for and serve single women. They are not a threat to your marriage. I've heard single women tell me that sometimes that's how coupled people make them feel, like they're a threat to their marriage or that they're somehow dangerous or that they want their husbands. Man, no, see them and love them and build genuine relationship with them. They are not invisible. And do your part where you are to make sure you are thinking about how you can provide support and Christian community. That's why we're here, is to give community for single women that we love and know and that we work with in our real lives. See them, know them, don't make them feel invisible. Viral Jesus was brought to you by Christianity Today. I've been your host and creator, Heather Thompson Day, producer and audio engineer, Lauren Joseph, and executive producer, Ed Gilbreth. Please review and recommend us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Next week, we are sitting down with Rachel Marie Kong. I'll see you next week for another conversation where a Viral Jesus guest talks and you and I listen so we can learn. I love growing with you on Viral Jesus.
This episode was brought to you in part by Wheaton College's MA in Humanitarian and Disaster Leadership, which prepares Christian professionals to serve others faithfully and excellently. Called to help people facing disasters, human trafficking, poverty, or displacement as refugees? Visit wheaton.edu/HDL.